It's just, this just isn't good press, Chad. It influences juries. It influences the trial that's coming up. This just isn't what we need
David,
in the paper
David,
right now.
David, what? Now we're on the air. You got to take that down. You got to take it down. Take it down.
You haven't started the show yet, have you?
Yes,
we did. You're not talking about the economy on the rise?
No. Economy is, yeah.
The only economy on the rise is David Griggs' liquor store. But good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. This is our combination show tonight. This is both the Day 1 Championship Week video notebook and our regular Hoops HD report. So we've got a lot to get to tonight, but let me introduce everybody quickly. We've got David Griggs on one side of me, John Sleek on the other. Down below, both John Titel and Matt Sikowski. We do have a lot to get to tonight. We're going to be going through what's been going on and what's coming up in all the major conferences in this last week before conference tournaments in them. We're also going to be doing a quick look at what's happened today in conference tournament action and what's coming up tomorrow in conference tournament action. But before we get to any of that, we are going to start with our mailbag feature here. This is one of our favorite new features we have. We've invited people to come onto Twitter or email or however they want to contact us. And I've got some envelopes that some laser came in. I got the envelope right here. This is today's mail. La La Land. Oh.
Had it not been for you guys in the email thread, I would have had no idea what the hell you were talking about.
Okay. Now we do have a couple of questions that came in today, and this first one I'm gonna kind of throw out there. David, maybe throw this one out there to you. It came in from Brian B via Twitter. He comments that you guys, being us, are fans of true home court advantage in conference tournaments and not these neutral site games. And he says that if he wants to plan a trip to one, that really messes him up. What are your thoughts on that? That for fans, at least, it really is better to have a neutral court.
I mean, it is if, I suppose, your team doesn't have home court advantage. But if your team has home court advantage, then there's no need to plan a trip.
Well, Matt, let me kind of ask this the same thing to you, though. But, you know, if you're trying to figure out where to go and it's going to come down to the last day of the season and 2 days later the conference tournament starts, isn't it a little more difficult?
Yeah, that would be a little bit of a travel issue with that you might not be able to make some plans until a day or two before, or keep a close eye on the standings to see when someone clinches in and get the travel plans in. But I think for these teams, if you're going to only be in one big league, let's protect our top team who's earned the conference title.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, do you know how long you're going to stay? Because you don't know when your team's going to be eliminated. And, if you look at the attendance at, like, the Horizon League and some of the other leagues that have gone away from it, it's lower. So I think while it might be difficult for the few people that wanted to go to a predetermined site, you're going to get more people who do it because it's a home game and it's in their town where they live.
And again, Titel, I never got your thoughts on this, really. Do you like the home court, especially in the smaller conferences, or do you prefer a neutral court?
I honestly have no preference. I'm all for rewarding a team that does well in the regular season, because if you can go 17-1, 16-2, you deserve some perk, be it home court or a single or double bye or something. But when I think of it from my perspective, like, if I'm a Arizona Wildcat fan in Tucson, I like the fact that it's a neutral site in Vegas. However, if it rotated around every 10 to 12 years and came to Tucson once, and that would be our year to go nuts, and if it's a way up in Seattle, maybe we don't take the trip all the way there. So I kind of like sharing the wealth, spreading the wealth, but I also see the merit to doing other things, so I don't really have a preference, to be honest.
Yeah, well, for the multi-bid leagues, like the nine of the – are we back down the nine? Yeah, we are, because of the Mountain West.
Yeah.
For them, I don't do it at a predetermined site. It's probably better for those that do, because it's going to be extremely rare that the Pac-12, the SEC, the ACC would need to protect the first place finisher. Those teams are not only inside the bubble, they're inside the first ballot. So for those, yeah, they work better as showcases and jamborees. But for your typical under the radar conferences, I think that it works much better at campus sites. The atmospheres are better. We're going to get to this later in the show, but do you get the kind of home court atmospheres that you had at Jacksonville, North Florida, or at Gulf Coast, even though it was a blowout, or at Kennesaw, if that tournament's at a neutral site? No way.
Well, let me go. I got one more mailbag question here. And Sleek, let me ask you, I'll let you answer this one here. This came from James from Santa Fe, and he asks, how hard is it to work with a puppet that is drunk all the time?
I think it's going to be a lot harder to work with a puppet that's... I think it's harder to work with a puppet that's sober, quite frankly, than it is a drunk puppet.
I just asked the questions, David. I don't know what to... And there he goes drinking again.
That wouldn't be a New Mexico State fan,
would
it?
Start monitoring this mailbag.
It might be. It does come from Santa Fe. But what we want to do right now is turn to the major conferences. And we've had a lot of games to talk about, including games that already happened this evening. We are recording this around 10 o'clock tonight, so a couple of the late games, including Miami, Virginia Tech, and Oklahoma, Kansas, are going on right now. So we won't be discussing them during the show, but we will be discussing several different conferences, but I want to go ahead and pull up the screen share here first of all and bring up the West Coast Conference standings, where we had the upset of the season this weekend when BYU went to Gonzaga and handed the Zags their first loss. Matt, let me start with you. How shocked were you by that game?
Incredibly shocked, that especially when Gonzaga had it under control most of the way. It was in single digits for like the vast majority of the second half, but still, I figured the superior team that had control most of the way, like whenever BYU would get close, they'd push it back out to 6 or 8. All of a sudden, the last 4 minutes or so, TJ Hawes hits a couple of really hard shots, Eric Mika hits a couple of tough shots, and Josh Perkins tried to play hero ball, and you have 29, and it'll become 29-1.
Tytel, we now have BYU with 21 wins. I actually have here ready. I can actually show us the West Coast Conference bracket here that's going to be starting on Friday night. BYU, if they get by Loyola Marymount and then knock off St. Mary's and then lose to the Zags in the championship game, do we have a discussion about this team now that they have such an amazing road win on their profile?
You can have the discussion. I don't think it's going to be a long one. I don't think it's going to end well for the Cougars. Just to emphasize the point Matt made about the fact that they had this in control, it wasn't just like they were up 9 with a few minutes. They were up 18-2 after a few minutes. Like, I turned it off because it was over and because I'm an old man who needs to get my sleep. And then I woke up the next day and they lost, and I still don't believe it. If BYU can pull off the miracle, that'd be great. I don't believe they beat St. Mary's this year, so I don't see it happening. They lost by double digits, both home and away, so it's in the discussion, but I don't think we're going to have that discussion.
Stalika, you want to make a comment about them as well?
I think shocking is a word that's used far too liberally in the media, and I think it also applies right here. This is actually the third straight year that BYU has actually won at Gonzaga. I mean, let's not forget, 2 years ago, BYU was able to win at Gonzaga, and that actually catapulted them into a first four game. But I agree with John T in that they probably need to win the conference tournament just to get the golden ticket.
Well, conference, if they win Tuesday night in the conference tournament finals, they will be in. And then all us bracketologists can moan about the fact that they can't play in a Friday-Sunday region and how to fit them into the bracket and all that fun stuff. But let's turn over to the ACC, where the other big news actually came tonight, where Virginia, who had been reeling, just came off of a huge home win over North Carolina that really might have actually saved their shot at a protected seed, saved their shot at going up even higher than that, maybe. Matt, what did you take away from this game?
Yeah, exactly. I moved Virginia into protected seed range now, knocking down Purdue, who had kind of an ugly loss this weekend to Michigan. And I think Virginia's always been a pretty good team, and it looks like the little adjustment Tony Bennett made, putting Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome into the starting lineup for offense, I think it may give them enough offense to where they're suddenly a dangerous team again.
David, we did see North Carolina pick up the win over Louisville earlier and then win at Pitt. So what does this do for North Carolina in your mind? Are they out of the 1-seed discussion now, or do you think they're still up there?
They're not out of the discussion. I mean, if nothing else, we have the conference tournament in front of us. But the one thing, again, when you look at their true road wins, they don't have the true road wins that the other number one seeds have, particularly Kansas and Villanova. And I think that it really, really would have helped. But no, they're not out of the discussion. Just because they have too many tough games left between the regular season and the conference tournament, potentially.
And Stalika, you did a bracket on the website this morning where you had Miami as an 8 seed, which I took exception to. They had another huge win this week over Duke. I think that this is one of the fastest rising teams in the country. Do you want to defend why you don't think they're that high?
I think we've gone completely full circle when I'm the one that's lowballing Miami a bit, and Chad is the one that's actually proclaiming Miami here. I mean, sure, the Hurricanes have a few nice wins, and winning at Virginia certainly does help, but I guess I'm just a little more enamored with some of the 7 seeds that I had right now.
Well, Tytel, this is the Miami profile on the screen. What's wrong with this profile? I mean, is there any reason this team isn't a clearly wearing white on the first weekend?
You can make a good argument for it. I think that there's a lot of losses. Granted, they are losses to good teams. And the Syracuse loss is not looking as bad, assuming Syracuse makes the tourney, which I think they will.
No.
There's a few good wins, obviously, and a great win over Carolina, but they could be. I mean, I see them more as a 9 or 10 right now, but, I mean, they're on their way to an 8. I think it's a legit prospect.
But if Chad wants to ask about my seed list, Miami is my top 8, and Maryland would have been my bottom 7. So a case could easily be made to flip the 2 teams if necessary.
Well, David, you moaned about Syracuse. You don't think Syracuse is in the field right now, despite the amazing home win over Duke and then getting blown out at Louisville. Are you penalizing them for losing at Louisville?
Correction. I think Syracuse is in the field. I don't like it because I don't think we should be. Let's pull them up, shall we?
Sure. I can pull up the profile right here like yes. You just saw with Miami. And then Matt,
okay. You have to look at it a little more carefully than just on the surface. You have to be smart about it, which I am. These wins against – and I kind of pointed this out in John's write-up. The home win against Duke is good. Duke's 3-5 in true road games. Virginia a little bit better at 7-5. Who are their other big ones? Florida State is – 3-5, I think, in true road games. And Miami's the other one who is right at 500 in true road games, although they're right in there with Virginia Tech right now. So when all you've done is beaten a collection of 4 teams at home, which are, while good, collectively are still under 500 on the road, and you've done nothing else, and this team has done nothing else, their next road game that they win against a team with a winning record will be their first.
They have no road games left.
Okay, so they're not going to beat a team on the road that has a winning record. And that's just not enough, but the committee will take them, and they will go back to the Final Four, and they will do all this just to irritate me.
Pat, sorry, you had a comment, I think, maybe going back to Miami, or is it on Syracuse?
Now, I'll just add Miami quickly. One reason why you might not have them as high in the bracket, they did nothing out of conference. And they lost some tough games to, like, Iowa State and that, but they didn't beat anyone of note out of conference.
Okay. I guess let's take a quick look at the upcoming games here in the ACC. Stalika, let me go to you here. What are you looking at besides that game Saturday night, which we'll get to in a second here? What are you looking at in terms of these games coming up this week?
I suppose BC and Notre Dame, just to see the Irish get closer to cementing their own possible protected seed along with their finale at Louisville.
Right, the Notre Dame-Louisville game I think is going to be a real good one too. You kind of mentioned that. Miami-Florida State, look for that one also. But David, you actually had a fun fact for us about Saturday night's Duke-North Carolina game.
Yes. A couple okay. Fun facts here. The first is, as good and as storied as these teams are, do you know, I checked Wikipedia today, I looked back at everything, they have never met in the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
Not one. And the other thing is that only 8 miles separates the two of them.
You forgot to mention they've met in the NIT tournament in the 70s.
Okay, let's hop on over to the Big East next. Where, let's see if it comes up there. There it is, right there. Where, Stalika, I gotta do it. I'm sorry. Your Xavier Musketeers lost another game.
Oh, no, my test pattern is broken.
How much trouble do you think your Musketeers are in? And then I'm going to ask a couple other people about them as well. But they have now lost five straight games here.
Well, they've already had a couple historical lows this week because their five-game losing streak is actually their longest going back to the 1982 season.
Wow.
That was also the last season where Xavier actually had a losing record in conference play. But even as it is right now, they're kind of Clemson light in that they're actually competitive in most of their games, save the Marquette and Villanova games. They're competitive. They're just not winning them. I don't know what's going to happen against Marquette, but they better win at DePaul if they don't want to be sweating on Selection Sunday.
Well, Titel, you're our committee guessing expert. Do you think the Xavier team is on the verge of possibly even falling out of the field?
Possibly, but I think that what's in their favor is number one, injuries / guys leaving the program. Number two, nobody likes to lose five in a row in February. I get that, but when the five possible turning teams, not locks, Villanova, Providence, Marquette, Seton Hall, Butler, three of those away from home, the two at home being Villanova and Butler, who are looking like top four seeds, I wouldn't push the panic button just yet. Thank God they have some wins in the bank, like Creighton, Wake Forest, et cetera, Clemson. But I think Jonas is right. If they lose to DePaul, like, we might just have to skip the Big East tourney and call it a season.
Matt, one other team we've got to discuss here at the Big East is the team that's kind of heading the other opposite direction of Xavier, and that's the Providence Friars. How impressed are you about what they've been doing recently? They picked up the win at Creighton as well as a home win over your Marquette team this week.
I think generally they're playing well. That Saturday game was about the weirdest game I've ever seen because they were basically playing basketball on a hockey surface. It was 60 degrees in Providence. The floor was wet, and you were slip-sliding away, as Simon and Garfunkel would say.
The other big upset, of course, this week was Butler going in and winning a game at Villanova, David. I think that was almost maybe not as shocking as BYU winning at Gonzaga, but a close second.
Right, and Butler's had just a slightly better profile than BYU, but so it meant a little more as far as what it does for that program. Like, for BYU, it was a great moment, but it's not going to catapult them all the way into the field. Maybe not even if they went out to the championship game. But how about just a remarkable season by Butler? I mean, they've done so much. The top of their profile is incredible. And I think I'm more impressed and surprised with them than I am with just about anyone. Both Butler and Baylor, I think, started off unranked. And in the case of Baylor, they weren't even really getting any votes. But, I mean, they have just – really, really, I don't want to say overachieved because they're legitimately good, but they've achieved a lot. Like at Villanova, at Xavier, not that winning at Xavier is becoming a pastime in the Big East, but you know, the neutral floor win against Arizona, the home win against Villanova, what a profile.
And the non-upset loss at Indiana State. But
yeah, the non-upset loss in Indiana State.
So. I mean, if you ignore those Indiana State and St. John's losses, this is a team that could be fighting for a one seed, couldn't they?
Yeah, I think so. But you can't ignore them.
It's a pastime if you're one of the top three seeds in the Big East right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Titelli, we've got 10 top 50 wins here, three of them top 10 wins, two of which are away from home. Where does this team cap out? How high can they get?
They can get a two. You could argue if they sweep three ranked Big East teams in the Big East tourney, maybe a one, but I think that's pushing their luck, especially because the stat of the week from John S. Number of Big East tourney wins by Butler, please.
Zippo.
They've
amazing.
Never won.
Wow. Zero.
That is amazing.
Wow.
that really is.
All right, well, let's take a look at the upcoming games this week here first. And Matt, let me ask you about this. Is there anything that you're keying in on here on these games this week other than this Marquette-Xavier game that we kind of discussed already for Wednesday night?
Well, I'd say there's two big ones on Saturday, the Seton Hall at Butler, where Hall could, assuming they beat the reeling Georgetown at home, and they could absolutely lock up a bed. And then, of course, Creighton Marquette will Will that be Marquette fighting to get back to 9-9, which probably would be enough? Would that maybe Marquette going for 10-8, which would actually be the 3 seed, I think, of the Big East tournament? It's
Wow, that you're right. They could finish up there, especially with Creighton has been sliding a lot lately. Let's go over to the Big Ten conference, though. And when it comes to the Big Ten, David, let me ask you this about this Purdue team. I actually saw somebody's bracket today where they thought Purdue was a 2 seed. I see other people calling them barely a 4 seed. What do you do with this Purdue team?
A 2 seed.
Yeah, the 2 seed I did not get, especially they lost this week to Michigan. But then, you know, they did pick up a win over the weekend. So what are you looking at for this Purdue team?
I liked them more than anybody else before the weekend, and I think I still do, and I still think that depending on how strong they finish and what they do in the Big Ten tournament, they could end up as a protected seed, but I was thinking more of a 4 than a 2, and that's if they finish strong.
Well, Matt, we also want to discuss Northwestern, who had a very, very rough week, losing for the second time to Illinois and then going and losing at Indiana in a game that they completely blew twice. They were running away from the first half, let Indiana take it over, turned around the second half, and then blew it again at the end. Is this first ever bid in trouble now for the Wildcats?
It's in a little bit of trouble, and I would not have signed them up for this schedule, having a very hot Michigan team coming in Wednesday that I think really wants to prove they can win on the road. And then you have Purdue, who might be playing for the outright Big Ten title on Sunday. So these are two games I would have asked them to win. I think their better opportunity was last week to get that needed 10th win. If they lose 3 straight, these two are the Big Ten tournament, they're in some trouble, I think.
Well, because that would be 5 straight. And Whiskey's another team that's kind of on – that was their big win, but Whiskey has lost 4 of their last 5. And yeah,
David, why don't you address this? That's where I was going to go next. Wisconsin losing at Ohio State and then at Michigan State this week.
Yeah, Ohio State not even really in the field, and Michigan State probably not in the top half of it. Now, those aren't bad losses per se, but they are by protected seed standards, which is, you know, a week or so ago where I thought Whiskey was heading. And then you sort of look at the top of their profile, and they've won at Minnesota, and they've won at Minnesota. They have the home win over Michigan, but everyone that plays Michigan at home, with the exception of Rutgers and one other team who I can't remember, seems to beat Michigan. So how much credit do you really give them for that?
In all fairness to Wisconsin, they didn't have a scouting report for Michigan Agricultural College.
John T., let me ask you this. We got 3 teams here at the 8, 9, 10 lines in Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana that actually had – somewhat of a good week. So Illinois with the win over Northwestern, Iowa beating both Indiana and winning at Maryland, Indiana with the win over Northwestern. Then can any of those 3 teams get into the picture here in your opinion?
My guess is no. The whole point of having a tourney in a power conference is that you have chances for great resume boosting wins, but the bubble is certainly weak enough that it's possible, but my guess is no.
Okay. Matt, here's the upcoming week in the Big Ten. Is there something specific that you're looking forward to here?
I am getting to actually counter on John T's point. Wednesday night's game, Michigan State and Illinois. Illinois wins that, and they beat Rutgers. I think they're at least in the discussion. I don't know would they be in the field. I don't know if they belong in, but then again, about the last 6 or 8 teams in probably won't belong. But no, I think they're actually fairly close.
Well, here's that Illinois profile. 3 straight wins, put them at 5 straight, the sweep of Northwestern, a neutral court win over VCU, and really nothing horribly bad. The worst they've done is got swept by Penn State.
Yeah, it's a kind of a blah profile, but they win these last 2. They win maybe 1 or 2 in the Big Ten tournament, 19 or 20 and 13. That's a whole lot worse might get in.
I'm setting down my bourbon, and I'm going to pour myself a glass of bleach now. We're talking about Illinois getting in. Illinois and Syracuse.
Yeah. We talked about this two Northwestern games coming up as well. Those are a couple other ones.
These are kind of not only are these pivotal, they're historically pivotal in the sense that they've never been. Oh, wow.
David, I just got a message here that you wanted to do something about some type of blind resumes as well.
We're doing this now. Okay.
I'll go ahead and pull this down here. I'll let you pull it up on your screen. I'm not that big of
a fan. It'll take a sec. Well, this is – I mean, you see these, and I at first it got annoying because it was three or four lines of data that was very superficial, and you would try and pick which one you'd like, and there was always some sort of a twist. I wanted to do away with the twist, but here we go. Like, this is the Hoops HD version of blind resumes. Let's get it up on the screen. Here we go. Blind resumes for complete morons. And we have Team A there, and we have Team B. And Chad, you're the host, so I guess I'll go with you here. Which resume looks better to you?
I kind of would go with Team A here, David. I think 3 is a little bit better than 142.
Yeah. So Team A and then Team B. Well, and now we're going to scroll down and we're going to see who the two teams are. Okay. This is going down to the next page. Can we see there? Team A is Tim Miles' Nebraska Cornhuskers. That is who you picked. There they are. Team A. And then Team B is Mississippi State. So we have Nebraska. That's who we selected.
No, David, they are not third. David, you're destroying our credibility here. You are making things up. And
I'm not making things up. This was just right off the not making.
What's just a corn huck, sir?
I've just ejected David from our podcast. goodbye to Griggs. Let's move on here. He's making things up. This is just beyond ridiculous at this point. Let's go over to the Big 12. Where we did see, as we record this right now, Kansas is in a tough game with Oklahoma, but they are the new number one team in the nation, Tytel. Do you think they are the number one team overall at this point?
I think so. They have a ton of great wins, no losses to embarrass themselves over. I really think their concern for Bill Self should be off the court stuff, because on the court they can play with anyone and arguably beat anyone. They got a lot of little off the court things, and they could just come together to ruin what's looking like a really nice season.
Well, the team that's almost two teams are starting to fade, I think, a bit here are Baylor and West Virginia. Baylor did just pick up a big win tonight over West Virginia. Matt, let me ask you about them. Is Baylor right in the ship in terms of at least finishing on the 2 or 3 line?
Yeah, I think tonight was big. I think they'll be no worse than a 3 now, even if they lost their next 2. Because they have just done so much good on their resume, and they're decent enough in all the Ken Pobs and the RPI, all those. So I think they'll be no worse than a 3. To get to a 2, they probably should still win 1 or 2 more. And losing Saturday would not be a great idea for a 2-seed team.
And look at that. They're actually a game, at least in the loss column, behind Iowa State at this point. Can you be a 2-seed when you finish behind Iowa State in your conference?
That might be hard, although I think they'll end up being tied at 12-6 because I don't think Iowa State's going to be going to West Virginia and winning.
All right. Well, Sleek, let me ask you about West Virginia. This is a team that barely won at TCU by 1 point in a game that maybe they got robbed in even. The TCU got robbed in even. Then loses today to Baylor. Is this team falling off of the top 4 seed lines?
I don't think they're falling off quite yet, although I certainly would have reason to pause if they're not able to beat Iowa State at home. I mean, unless Iowa State shows up wearing a jersey from Oklahoma, I think the Mountaineers actually win that game.
David, I think we've got you back on here. I'm not certain why we let you back on, but you are.
I'm not certain why you threw me off. That's the blind resume.
David, you need to pull a Bobby Valentine and come in with sunglasses and a mustache if you're going to sneak in.
But, David, let me ask you the Big 12 here. Before we even get to the upcoming games, let's discuss Kansas State. I told you all last week that Kansas State was complete trash, and nobody believed me. Well, and you all wanted them in the field even. Are you ready to change your mind after they lose by 30 points to Oklahoma, the last place team?
Well, it just goes to show you that Oklahoma is probably they're probably a tournament team.
Tytel, Look, you're our committee getting guessing expert. I know they've got three very nice wins, but if they had played something slightly better than the 244 non-conference strength of schedule, I think this team would be sub 500 right now.
Yes, it's also a case. Look at the Maryland and Kansas, 3 points for two losses to great teams, and Kansas was another. I mean, they could have swept Kansas.
But they didn't.
But they didn't.
Do you think this is still a tournament team at this point after that 30-point loss at Oklahoma?
It's a bad loss. I'll give you that. I think they are, but four games below 500 in conference play is a recipe for disaster. If you look back at the history of the tournament, I think it's only happened twice where a team who's four games under 500 makes it as an at-large.
David.
Oh, sorry. I did have a question about that. Do you happen to know what those teams did in the conference tournament after finishing? Did they at least win one or two games?
If you're asking me, I do not know.
Okay, because if they're four games over 500 and they go out in their first game, they're actually five games under 500 at that point. But anyway, what was your question, Chuck?
My question was look at the upcoming games here. We've got, I mean, this is Iowa State's week, isn't it, if we look at this schedule?
Yeah, potentially. That Oklahoma State-Iowa State game is going to be a lot of fun. I know that those aren't – they're middle of the conference and not top – well, Iowa State's getting to the top of the conference, but those are two smoking hot teams right now. And I just think that that's going to be a fun game to watch. K-State needs to win at TCU just to get on the fringe of the bubble. If they go down at TCU – and I know TCU's a home court hero – what is that? That would be 7 out of 8 losses or something crazy. Like
you can light up the grill. They're burnt and cooked and toast at that
point. Okay.
Stalika, you had a comment about them, though?
I'd argue that this is going to be TCU's week right here because they're going to be hosting K-State, and then they go to an alligator hole in Oklahoma. So this would give them a chance to at least get to 8-10 and pick up one or two wins in the Big 12 tournament to try to at least get a sixth bid out of the Big 12 right here.
Yeah, that I mean, they have to go 2-0 if they want any shot. I agree with that. Let's go ahead and flip on over to the Pac-12. And
we have to.
John T., you don't want to do it. Obviously, we got to discuss it. Your Wildcats lost at home to UCLA.
Let me accept the stage for you. So we're at the bar with like 25 alums and we're playing okay, and I think we're up 4 at halftime, and then we lose the lead and we come back and we're coming, and then it's senior night and we got your point guard Kadeem Allen, the senior, who had missed a previous game or two with a finger injury, but he's back and he's open on the wing for the game tying 3 with 5 seconds left. Air ball. I can't think of a less clutch shot that I've ever seen in my life. It was a horrible way to finish, but we're still tied with Oregon for tops overall, and I don't think a Pac-12 tourney winner is going to get a 1 seed, but it's certainly possible, and I think a 2 seed is much more likely. And I also saw in the rankings that UCLA is now 3rd in the country. Come on.
Well, let me make this. I'm going to make the UCLA argument here, and I'll make it for everybody here. This is UCLA's profile pulling up. I was looking at the teams today. There is, in the entire country, I found two teams that had 3 wins against the top 10 in the RPI, with 2 of those 3 being true road wins. One of them is Kansas, who is pretty good. The other one is UCLA.
Who's pretty good.
They have nothing bad here. I would argue right now that UCLA, despite being a game in the loss column behind Arizona and Oregon, should be the highest ranked of these three teams. David, you're a big fan of those top of the profile. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, in the sense that, like, look at how close they were to having a 4th. There was that last second shot where the technical foul was not called at Oregon.
Matt, a team that did not have a very good week was USC. They had lost at the current distraction in Arizona State. Is USC in trouble now for a bid?
Sort of. Like, I think if they lose one this week, which, God, if you're losing either at home to Washington or Wazoo, then I think you're in real trouble. So having those two, I think they'll sneak away those two at a 10 and 8. It'll be enough. I wouldn't mind if they get sent to Dayton. I don't think at this point they're as good as any of the three Big East teams on the bubble, or four if you want to include Xavier, or some of these that, like, someone else, like, I just don't like this team, but they're going to probably get in.
Well, let me ask you this about their upcoming games. They're hosting Washington and Wazoo. Say Lorenzo Romar gets the flu and is unable to attend the game, and Washington wins. How bad do you ding them since Romar wasn't there?
Oh, David, why do we even let you on these shows anymore? Salika, when we look at the upcoming schedule, the two biggest games this week involve Cal, who had that heartbreaking loss to Oregon. They've got, not that Utah and Colorado are tournament teams, but they are both solid teams, at least, and they have to play them both on the road. How important is it for Cal to win, to sweep this week?
Well, it's going to be especially important to win at Utah, because Colorado is starting to slip a bit after their loss at home against Utah. But, I mean, it's historically difficult to get the wins in the mountain schools. But I think for the Bears to have a realistic path to an at-large, they need to, at a minimum, win the Utah game.
Well, I got to take exception with you. If you said Colorado's the worst team, then isn't that the more important win, because that becomes a bad loss if you lose it?
I don't know. When you look at Oregon, they also won at Utah and lost to Colorado.
I think Oregon's won a few more games than Cal this year, though, haven't they? Just a few. Well, Tytel, do you agree with me that Cal has to sweep this week?
To get an at-large bid, I think they do, just because it's a good resume, but either of those would be a bad loss. And to quickly go back to UCLA, not only do they deserve a lot of credit, I'll give you that. I didn't have time to look at the stats, but I assume that the number of teams who've beaten Kentucky on the road and Arizona on the road in the same decade is very short, much less to do it in a three-month span. Like, Steve Alford deserves a ton of credit. I just think number three in the country is a little high, but there's merit to that argument.
So there's no banner planes going around Paulie saying fire Steve Alford this year, huh?
I hope not.
Well, no, Indiana may have hired the pilots because okay. They'd probably like to get him without having to buy out the gun.
The SEC, Matt, let's take a look over there, where Florida actually completely demolished South Carolina this week. And then Kentucky went and took care of Florida. Kentucky now up by a game. What are we looking at for Kentucky and Florida? Are these both three seeds? Could one of them get to the two line?
I think as of now, I would have Kentucky a three and Florida a four. Florida's probably about my top four seed, but something like that. I think if Kentucky wins out, they could probably get to the two line, as maybe say the number eight on the S curve. But I think both fairly safe and protected seeds, but not a ton of ceiling for either of them. I think two is the absolute. I think three is the highest Florida can get. Like, two is the highest Kentucky can get.
Well, we've been asking this a lot, too. We've got four teams here that look like they're kind of in decent shape. I know South Carolina was faltering, but they picked up a home win over Tennessee. That kind of stopped the bleeding there a little bit. But is there a fifth team?
And yes, there
we've,
is.
We've had some discussion about this Vanderbilt team, and let me pull up
the profile. Anchor down!
Yeah.
They picked up a win at Tennessee this week. And, Tytel, let me ask you about them.
Don't scroll that. Just leave it.
Win at Arkansas, a ton of losses, a huge week this week at Kentucky and home to Florida. If they split these two games and lose in the conference tournament, they will have 15 losses. I'll throw one of your questions at you. How many teams have ever gotten that large bid with 15 losses?
Big fat zero.
Do you think this Vandy team is still in the picture here?
They are, but you buried the lead. You have to beat Kentucky on the road or Florida at home. If they can, they become in the discussion, because you can't argue with the strength of schedule. It's too amazing.
But 15 losses?
But they'd have 14 if they beat Kentucky or Florida, which I don't think they're going to do.
All right.
Well, I think Chad is desperate to scroll down here, because
we don't need to see the sub 100 wins, Chad. You don't need to know.
There's a 20-point loss at Missouri, too. Matt, is there anybody else other than Vanderbilt that is still in the picture here beyond the top four?
No, you and slip there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might try to shoot Alabama in, but no, I think it's just them. I mean, I kind of feel bad for Georgia, but especially if they don't have Yonte Maiden, it's hard to really say they're a contender. So I think, no, it's the top four. Then I, of course, because of the metrics of that, have kind of soft spot for Vandy. And if they win one of those, I think I'll be arguing for them next week if they win one of their games.
Yeah.
They're probably going to go 0-2, make it easy for us.
Well, if they do, that's one thing. But the one thing is, you bring up the 15 losses, but they played the number one overall strength of schedule. So to me, what that says is, well, you lost 15 games. Had you played the 10th ranked schedule and scheduled two more bye games and won those, then you would have made it. I mean, how many of their – I know it's 15 total losses, but how many of them are we really going to ding them for? Well, one, it deserves more than a dinging. It deserves an absolute I don't even know the proper adjective to describe how the Missouri lost. But
I'd like to say how impressive it is. They're still top 50 in a predictive rating with a 20-point loss to Missouri.
Yeah.
Stalika, if we look at the upcoming games, those two Vandy games, the biggest ones, anything else that you're really looking at here?
I'm also looking at Florida to see whether or not they're going to be able to hang near the top, because they're going to have Arkansas coming into the Swamp, and they're also going to a hungry Vandy team on Saturday. So it's not inconceivable that they could be matched in the standings by Arkansas and South Carolina should they slip up.
All right, let's quickly run through the last couple of conferences here. We'll start with the American, where we had an incredible upset over the weekend, David. And I'm not talking about SMU winning at UConn, of course. I'm talking about Cincinnati going down to Taco Fall and those Central Florida Knights.
Yeah, and Central Florida isn't the easiest place to win. I think they're 13-3 at home. So, I mean, you can't – let's not get too carried away with it, but – I do think that the loss takes any outside chance of Cincinnati being a protected seed. I don't think our committee would have put them up there, but had they gotten to 30 wins, which they would have had they won out and won the conference tournament, the real committee may have put them up there in the protected seed range. I think that that door's closed. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a momentary setback. It'll fade into the background. UC is still who they were before the game. And they are very, very, very easily in on the first ballot. We've locked them in, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
So, Stalika, I got to give you a chance to do it here. You did a bracket day. You thought that Houston is an NCAA tournament team. I know your last team in, but you made the case for them. Can you explain it to us right here while we can all beat you up for saying it? Because I don't see it. I really don't see it.
I mean, it's true they're not going to have any sexy brand name wins, but they did have some solid wins in the Gulf Coast Showcase when you look at South Dakota in the semifinals, who's actually the Summit League regular season champ. You also have Vermont on a last-second shot, and I've scared Chad away. I mean, they did sweep UConn. They did pick up a nice road win at Memphis, but other than that, you really have to – use your imagination and
okay. I'm back. I couldn't even bear it. Tytel, do we use our imagination to count wins over South Dakota as putting for reasons that we put teams in the tournament?
How about you lose to Harvard and you're out of the tournament? Isn't it that easy?
Yeah.
No, Harvard's not a team that requires a waiver.
You lost to Johnny Jones.
Oh, brother! Yeah. Forget about that one.
Let me go. I mean, I will give you this one thing. They are playing at Cincinnati Thursday night. If they win that game, I think we can discuss Houston. But, David, I can't be serious about Houston before
that. But look at those predictives, though. I mean, the computers are telling us something that the current resume results are not.
Then let's go to our expert about predictives. Matt, is Houston a tournament team?
No.
Okay. let's move on. The A-10, we did see VCU suffered the loss. The loss at home. Sorry, it was at the road.
It was at Rhodey.
Yeah, it was at Rhodey. I was just trying to get that up here. VCU suffered the loss at Rhodey. David, does that hurt for VCU's chances, and does that put Rhodey back in the picture for you?
yes and no, but it hurts in the sense that, I mean, it's VCU certainly not a lock. But I think that even with that, they're still inside the bubble because Rhodey has been really good at home. I think they've only lost to Dayton, and is it one or two other games? But I mean, VCU can't just coast in. They have the big win at Dayton. If they win that one, I think they're all right. But they cannot lose at home to George Mason.
Yeah. Rhode Island lost at Houston. They're behind the Cougars in line.
Okay. David, you did mention the big game there. VCU at Dayton coming up Wednesday night. That should be a really good one, a really fun one, one of the top games of the conferences.
Yeah, the winner of that, especially if it's Dayton, if they win at or if they beat VCU at home, which I think they will, that clinches it for them outright, and I think that's enough. I don't think we're going to absolutely lock them in, but I think they're in if they win that one. How can they not be?
Did I tell you, you had a comment about about Dayton's game?
I will be live at the Charles E. Smith Center Saturday night for Dayton at GW, which I thought was going to be a blowout even as of a couple weeks ago. GW has not lost a lot of home games this year. The only one they've lost in the past month and a half, a little game to VCU with 0.4 seconds on the clock. This team is surprisingly good down the stretch. I think Dayton better not be looking ahead to the A-10 tourney and focus on GW.
And that's kind of one of those trap games in between the huge game against VCU and the A-10 tourney.
Right.
That you might not be completely up for.
Yeah.
And another little fun fact on Dayton. They've tied for the, conference lead? They have never won the regular season outright.
Really? That is fun.
Atlantic 10, at least.
Huh. One other team to briefly mention here, Wichita State is in the top 25. We've discussed them. John T., let me ask you this question about Wichita State. I will actually pull up here. I should have it up on the screen. This is the Missouri Valley Conference bracket for them. They get the winner of Bradley Drake, then they get the winner of Northern Iowa, Missouri State, and then potentially at Illinois State in the final. How many games, if any, does Wichita State need to win to guarantee a spot in the field? Can they lose their first one? Do they have to win one, two, all three?
Man, if they lose to like an 8-win Drake team, that's going to be pretty, pretty ugly. They won't because Drake's not beating Bradley. I think that they'll be okay. Although, tourney trivia, who is the 2-time defending MVC tourney champ?
That would be Northern Iowa down there.
I would.
Do you think that's a trap game? I know you actually were on the conference call with the Missouri Valley coaches today, correct?
I was. I love Ben. I love Marshall also, but Ben Jacobson is such an amazing coach. And the fact is, like, it's not that he always has the best team as a 1 seed who wins the MVC tourney. A couple of years ago, they were ranked like 11th in the country when they did it. Last year, I believe they were like a 6 or 7 or 8 seed, but just kept upsetting people, and there were other upsets, so they didn't have to play the top seeds.
There were 4 last year.
Okay.
Yeah, they actually had Illinois State in the final, if I remember correctly. But who
they had Evansville in the final Wichita in the semis.
Okay.
But just to show that they can win from different things. And I asked him, like, does your preparation or your strategy change? He's like, no, like, we're trying to win the game at hand.
All right. That's it for the major conferences. We're going to kind of turn to our Championship Week video notebook portion of the show now. And this is the Atlantic Sun Tournament that started off today. David, we saw 2 blowouts and 2 really good games in the A-Sun tonight.
Real exciting finish in both those games. North Florida, Jacksonville. Jacksonville had a game-tying attempt at the buzzer that didn't go in. Big win for North Florida. That's a big rivalry game. And the other, this was happening, like, if you're watching on the quad screens, that was happening at literally the exact same time Kennesaw State and Upstate went down to the wire. South Carolina Upstate had the last possession, and I didn't have the sound on. And it looked to me that they had called a foul and that Upstate was going to get 2 free throws with the chance to tie it. And I looked down to see what was happening in the North Florida game, thinking that they were going to line up for 3 throws. And then when I looked up at the game, they were shaking hands. So I guess a foul was not called.
No, a foul was not called. We now have, going forward, the only upset that happened was Kennesaw, and that's a very mild one, 4-5. We now have Kennesaw's going to be at Gulf Coast. Lipscomb's going to be at North Florida, who did ugly, ugly things to NJIT. Any changes to who you think is going to win this tournament? Sleek, let me ask you that.
I went with Lipscomb last night, and I'm sticking to that.
I agree with you. They looked really good tonight. Let's turn over to starting tomorrow night, Big South Tournament. And Matt, let me ask you about this here. We've got the 7-10 game between Campbell and Presby and the 8-9 game between Charleston Southern and Longwood. Are you excited?
No, but I will say, I think Winthrop and Asheville are two teams. If one of them wins, I think would be a little frisky in the first round game. And Winthrop has won at Illinois, so they're capable of beating a big boy team. So if Winthrop, especially if Winthrop wins it, I think they could be a dangerous 14-15 seed.
Well, Tytel, who do you think is going to win the Big South?
I picked Winthrop in my preview. I think that, as Matt said, like there's other teams like Asheville who are right there. It's hard to pick a team with a 5'7 point guard, especially in the NCAA tourney. Like, I agree they're a little frisky, but 5'7, like, it's just so little.
Yeah, they did lose a regular season game to Gardner-Webb, as if I recall correctly. They've got them potentially coming up. I think they lost to Gardner-Webb and a High Point game, although I could be wrong about that. Slika, do you agree with him, Winthrop?
It's not being played at Buies Creek this year. It's not being played at Coastal Carolina. It is finally being played at the campus site of Winthrop, and they would host the championship game if they get that far. But I do think this is going to be the year the Fighting Kelseys finally get over the hump and actually beat Asheville in the title game.
All right. David, let me ask you also.
Winthrop, and everybody else has covered it all. UNC Asheville and Winthrop have played some really good games, particularly the double overtime game at Asheville, and it looked like Asheville was going to finish in first and get it on their home court. But overall, I think Winthrop's had the better season, not just in conference play, but overall, and they should blow through that quarterfinal game against whoever it's against. Is there any reason why you decided to take the –
I was just putting the Big South standings up on the screen also there as we're discussing them, but I just want to quickly mention this Liberty team. Liberty team came out of nowhere this year, only lost four conference games. They were twice to Asheville, twice to Winthrop. Yeah. They'd be kind of a dark horse. I'm going to go with Asheville to win this tournament. I'm going to go with the second-place team.
Okay.
Let's go with one final conference tournament that also starts tomorrow night, Patriot League, the 8-9 game between American and Army, the 7-10 game between Loyola and Lafayette. Tytel, are you going to be glued to your screen on these two?
I will not. What I like about this – is that the wrong answer?
that was a great answer.
Thank you. What I like about this tourney is kind of the trickle-down effect. So – Bucknell has only lost three games since Christmas. Two of them were to Lehigh. Lehigh got swept this season by BU, who they'll probably meet as the 2-3 in the semifinals. So it's a weird scenario where, like, I don't like the favorite. Bucknell's a good team, but I fear the favorite just because teams below them have swept them and then teams below have swept them. So it could be this huge trickle-down effect.
All right, well, this is the tournament where we saw the Holy Cross come out of, I believe, a 9 seed last year to win it. It was won four games all on the road, four true road games taken. It was one
after
of the most
winning, I don't think, but one or two true road games all year prior to that. It was ridiculous.
David, who do you have winning this?
Bucknell. I think they are vulnerable, but I think it's they're at home all the way through. And unless American decides to repeat what Holy Cross did last year, I just like Bucknell.
I would, if this was a neutral court tournament, I'd be going on this Lehigh team, but it's so hard for them to win at BU and then at Bucknell. That'd be my problem with them. Salika?
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to make sure I'm looking at the right bracket because it differs slightly from what's on the Hoops HD page right now.
Okay, we can try to get that clarified here.
But as far as who I would pick to win this one, I'm going to go with Lehigh and their star player, Tim Kempton.
Okay, and Matt?
I am going for the Bison, who, like I mentioned in the Big South, you have Bucknell beating Vandy non-conference, so I think they would be a dangerous 14 seed.
Our last order of business for the night, this is our Hoops HD Tournament Survival Board. David, can you explain to everybody what this is?
Well, what this is, yes, this is one of the most relied upon tools that the selection committee has at their disposal. A lot of people want me to clarify that, like, the selection committee room has the internet in there, so they have access to this board and can use it during their deliberations, and they can see who they need to be considering, who they need to be locking in. They just come to this site and here it is. And generally, again, we have our categories. It's the, you know, the automatic bids are bold in all caps. The locks, those are teams that are going to be in whether they win the automatic bids or not. Under consideration, we're not really sure. If they win out through the rest of the year, like maybe they get in, or if they lose out, maybe they don't. We're not really sure. But the teams in regular text, like Boston College you see there, they need the automatic bids. Loser, you're screwed.
Well, let's see. This is where we were after last night. We're going to update it right now, live on tape delay.
Yeah.
This is after tonight's games. We are down to 329 teams left. As you also see here, 27 teams have been locked into the field. 41 spots do remain up for grabs still. But the big change tonight, of course, in the Big South there. I'm sorry, not in the Big South. The Atlantic Sun there. From 8 teams down to only 4 left.
And it's very important you updated that, because now the committee knows that, a team like North Florida or a team like Jacksonville, for instance, is not someone they should be considering.
That is correct. Yeah. On that note, let me go ahead and pull this on down here. Let me run through each of you for any other final thoughts for the evening. And Matt, let me start with you.
Yeah, I'm seeing one team we haven't mentioned because they're kind of in between that I want to take a serious look at would be the Illinois State Redbirds. They're one I kind of doubted them most of the way, but that impressive win against a pretty good Northern Iowa team that had been playing well coming in, I think might have sold me. And in fact, you went 7-1 in the Valley. Knowing what I do and being kind of a historical fan of that conference, I think a team that does that deserves to get it no matter what happens here in Arch Madness.
All right, Stalika.
Two things, actually. Number one, if you're looking for picks for conference champions, look no further than our colleague Matt Zukowski, who I believe actually won the Jerome last year. And number two, if we're going to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show as far as should conference tournaments be played at neutral sites, I favor neutral sites if you're the Missouri Valley or the Mid-American or even the Metro Atlantic, because you have cities like St. Louis, Cleveland, and Albany who have supported those tournaments for a number of years. I mean, if you're a conference like the Atlantic Sun or the Big South, I do believe that campus sites are the way to go.
Okay. John T.
If it's March coming up, it must be Ivy League hoops tourney time. Penn and Columbia.
Like every year, right?
Penn and Columbia owning the fourth spot with a 5-7 conference record. Penn's final two games this weekend are home. Columbia's final two games are away. So the Quakers are looking decent. God help me if I jinx it, but we'll see what happens Saturday night. We will know four teams who are not making the Ivy League tourney.
Yeah, well, three of them might be done by Friday night, but that last spot is definitely going to come down to Saturday. David, let me let you, for some reason, take a final thought here as well.
Okay, well, I think you're going to like this, Chad. Something that we did all throughout last year during the championship week notebooks that we hadn't done last night or tonight, but we will begin doing tomorrow, is we will be corresponding with selection committee members right here on the show, particularly the chairman. How did we forget this, Chad?
I didn't know we were going to be doing this, Dave. This is news to me. Yes. Tell me all about
it. Well, I mean, you know, last year we had that dialogue going via Twitter with John Castiglione, the chairman. Now, granted, he never tweeted
Joe
back.
Joe Castiglione.
Him. Now, granted, he never really responded, but, we were corresponding with him during the show every night.
I mean, no wonder we never got any responses if it's John Castiglione.
Yes. Maybe some other guy was getting our tweets. But let me end the show on a couple things. First of all, we were talking about the ACC earlier. Virginia Tech just pulled off a nice home win over Miami. So Miami just cracked the top 25 today. So much for that. Well, I still think the Miami team's in pretty good shape. The other thing is I got to turn back to the American for one last thought here. South Florida had a little bit of a problem this past week. See, apparently, a couple of their players, while waiting in the airport, had fallen asleep waiting for the plane, and they just left them behind. Now, I know that the season's almost over. It's been a horrible season, but you can at least bring your players back to the school with you, I would think. But
I mean, we have to emphasize they were not supposed to be punished for anything that we're aware of.
No, they just left them behind. But
were they in the terminal? I just don't see how that happens.
Oh, they were in a layover at the, I think it was Houston Intercontinental, trying to get a flight back to Tampa.
Yeah, but, and they were, at, but they were at the airport, like at the airport. Gate, and nobody woke them up.
But, on behalf of John Titel and David Griggs down below, John Slika and Matt Sikowski off to my sides, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us again. We'll be back every night with video notebooks. We'll have some bracket rundowns to come as well. And we'll talk to you again real soon.